Hello and welcome again to Catholic Answers Focus. I am your host, Cy Kellett. Our society seems to have become addicted to moral revolutions. The thrill of the great movements for moral change of the 1950s and 60s has left us chasing similar highs. Today, the movement for sexual liberation continues apace and has led many to conclude that the more limits we throw off, the more just and happy our society becomes. And having thrown off old-fashioned notions such as chastity outside of marriage and the permanence of marriage, we've now moved on to redefining sex and marriage at their very core. How far this thrill-seeking moralism will take us, none can say. But the Catholic Church remains steadfast in proclaiming that happiness is not found in throwing off all limits, but is found in accepting the vocation God has given each of us. Our guest this hour is Avera Maria Santos, a young woman who blogs at Inside My Holy of Holies. Well, that's a blog. You can find it at Inside or imhohblog.com. Avera Maria describes herself as a 20-year-old kid from down south who likes long walks on the beach and writing and being, quote, too Catholic to function. Avera Maria lives also with same-sex attraction and has said, the cross of same-sex attraction is by far the heaviest cross I carry. It is also by far the most beautiful. Avera Maria Santos, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm humbled.
Well, we're very, very happy to have you, very pleased to have you. I want to make sure I give the blog out again correctly because I fumbled it a little bit there, but it's imhohblog.com if you'd like to learn more about Avera Maria. And it's that blog that kind of brought you to the world's attention. You just started that in May of 2017, and can you tell us a little bit about what happened from there?
Absolutely. So around May of last year, my archdiocese actually got a chapter of Courage. And if you don't know what Courage is a phenomenal organization, basically like a support group for Catholics that live with same-sex attractions. And I was so excited to be able to help to build the Courage chapter in my area. And I was asked to help. So I was kind of thinking of ways to go about that. And I started a small blog to kind of shoot like different messages to our different members, just so we weren't leaving them high and dry between meetings. And I wasn't anticipating the fact that other people would go looking for such content and stumble upon mine. So it went from being something to where I was just sharing with 5 to 10 people to acquiring almost 29,000 views in a little over a year. So it was definitely not something that I was expecting, you know, but God works in mysterious ways and he saw fit to use me for this purpose. I absolutely don't think that I'm worthy, but as long as he keeps entrusting such a job to me, I will keep doing it to the best of my ability. So I enjoy it, but it definitely wasn't something that I was trying to make happen, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it does make sense indeed. Yeah, it sounds, just hearing you talk about it, the way you talk, it sounds like your faith is at the very center of your life.
It has come to that point. It definitely wasn't always the center, but there comes a point, I think, in everyone's life where you get sick and tired of being sick and tired. And the way that I see it, you can do one of two things. You can completely ignore God, and just kind of push him off to the side, which I think is what our culture has done, or you can see what this God thing is about, and you can get to know him. And as soon as I started putting my foot in the water saying, okay, I'm going to get to know you, he grabbed a hold of me like you wouldn't believe, and he has not seemed to let go, and I don't think that he's going to anytime soon.
Well, I want to get to that story, and if you would tell us that, I would love that, but I want to ask you this right from the get-go here, because I know many people who are listening will have objections to even the way we're talking about same-sex attraction and the way that you talk about your own experience with same-sex attraction. And that is to say, what about the person who says to you, Avera Maria, look, you're just involved in denial and self-hatred?
Oh, absolutely. One cannot be in denial of his nature, I don't think, for very long, and be sane. You know, like this is something that, you know, we can't just straight up ignore. I think, like for the longest time, when I tried to deny the fact that, you know, I'm a daughter of God and I tried to do things my own way, I went crazy. You know, I was constantly in a fight with not only myself, but with God, you know. And there's also, you know, the people who say, like, I'm in denial that my sexual attractions are my nature. And I would argue, you know, like, at the beginning, you know, God created this man and woman. He didn't go off and say, okay, later on, I'm going to create another type of human being that is directly sexually attracted to the same gender or the same sex. That never happened. So it made me kind of reflect on who I am and my identity, you know, my true identity, and, you know, what God said about me. Because we can stumble into this trap of saying, like, you know, what does society define me as? But if society was able to define the human person, society would then have to have authority or have created the human person, and we know that it didn't. You know, we became, or we came into existence long before our modern society had anything to do with how we looked at ourselves. So when I went back and looked at who God says that I am, you know, man and woman, we created them, you know, man and woman, God created them that day, you know, it made a lot more sense to me. And it made me look at myself in a light that's real, you know, that's true, that is based in reality. And it made me a lot happier, you know, and I can't deny that. And for people to be able to deny my experience, you know, it really doesn't make any sense at the end of the day, because, you know, you can't really deny the relationship that I've had with God. And that's really what I'm trying to put forth into the conversation around same-sex attraction, homosexuality, whatever you want to call it. It's just listen to the experience that I've had with God and then make your assumptions after that. But don't sit here and try to deny what I've experienced as real. You know, like, don't try to deny that what happened to me did not happen.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit then. What did happen? You say you're from down south. Where from down south?
I'm originally from Mobile, Alabama, the home of murder and Mardi Gras. Anybody that tells you that Mardi Gras started in New Orleans is lying.
I am glad we established that. I am glad you got that out. That sounds like that's been bothering you for a while.
It is my home that is the birthplace of Mardi Gras as we know it in the United States. We are very proud of that. No one is trying to take it from us, and we just will not let it happen.
All right, good. Well, I'm glad to hear you defending the honor of your city and its place in the history of Mardi Gras. Were you born into a Catholic family? How did you come to the Catholic faith?
I was. So my family is a huge mix of different things. We're predominantly African-American, but on my mom's side, there's a lot of, like, Creole and French heritage. So I think that that's where the majority of our Catholic roots come from. Both my parents are Catholic. Both of my mom's parents were Catholic. And then my dad's dad is Catholic. So we have a large majority of Catholics in the family. And it's been very influential to me, you know, just to see a lot of my family practice and be involved in the faith, you know, so I got to grow up seeing some of that. And it definitely helped me grow and eventually make it my own. You know, it wasn't forced upon me, but at the same time, I was shown the beauty of it very early on.
And so when does same-sex attraction come in to be part of your life, part of your consciousness, and how, as a girl or young woman in the Catholic faith, did you respond to that?
So I think the first time that I noticed something was different about the way that I felt about women was probably around my sophomore to junior year of high school.
Okay.
I remember this was a time in my life when, you know, kind of everything was going wrong for me. I was just suffering a great deal, you know, was suffering, trying to be loved and, you know, just not really experiencing that. And then I went to a Catholic youth conference in my archdiocese in Mobile to get out of playing a soccer tournament in 20-degree weather. So I decided to go to this youth conference on the beach, you know, because nobody wants to play when it's 20 degrees in Birmingham, Alabama, you know. So I decided my parents are youth ministers. I kind of have to go. And my life was drastically changed you know, at that conference. I got to encounter Christ in a way that I never thought possible, you know, that I didn't know was real. And, you know, it made a shift for me. But while I was at that same conference, one of my dear friends that I was rooming with used the term bisexual. And I didn't really understand completely what that meant. You know, I think I'd heard it on like TV or songs or something like that, but you know, it really didn't click for me what it was. And I didn't really know anyone that identified as bisexual, you know, so It confused me a bit. And it also kind of made me a bit confused about her, especially the closer that we got. And I ended up falling pretty hard for her, you know, in the coming months. And then we stopped talking, and it was pretty devastating for me. But then my junior year of high school rolls around, and there's this new girl in class. And I'm immediately drawn to her, and I don't understand why. You know, it was really frustrating for me. Trying to come to terms with how I was feeling about her. And I tried so hard to come to grips with it, you know. And I realized full on that, like, I really like her, you know. But off the bat, I didn't know what to do about that, you know, because, again, I just had this very powerful experience where I went to this youth conference and I, you know, trying to devote my life to Christ. You know, but at the same time, I can't deny how I feel about her. You know, so I really didn't know what to do.
So what
did you do? I actually didn't know what to do until I was in college, you know. So I started learning a bit more about what the Catholic Church actually taught about homosexuality. And for a long time, I was under the impression, you know, a lot of people will say, you know, the Catholic Church hates gay people. The Catholic Church forces celibacy on gay people. The Catholic Church does this, 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 and this, all these false teachings about the church that I listened to for so long. But when I actually dug deep and realized what was happening for myself, you know, like I started realizing none of that is true. You know, the Catholic Church calls people with homosexual attractions to chastity and to holiness, just like everyone else. You know, I'm not really any different from anyone else. Like, this attraction doesn't really make me that special, if it makes any sense. You know, it doesn't separate me. It doesn't isolate me from those around me. You know, so it made me feel drawn to a church that's unified, that looks at me and says, you're a human person, and you're called to holiness the same way that everyone else is. You know, and that kind of changed the game for me, and that's kind of how I've been living for the past year and a half, and I've seen drastic changes just in how I view myself, how I view my community, how I view my church, and it's made life all the more joyful to experience, knowing that I'm a daughter of God. That's where my identity lies, and nothing and no one can take that from me.
Wow. And how has courage played a part in that development of your understanding of your preciousness to God?
Courage is an absolutely marvelous organization that I don't think gets the credit that it deserves. But in Courage, you know, I've received the pastoral care that I needed. You know, I've been able to grow in my faith, you know, grow in prayer and grow closer to other people who live with the same struggles, the same joys that I do, you know. So I'm able to have a community that uplifts me, that protects my identity, that makes sure that I know that my identity doesn't revolve around my sexual appetites, but that, you know, lifts me to a place where it sees me as a woman. It sees me as a human being. It sees me as a daughter of God. And it reminds me of that constantly, and also reminds me of my call to holiness, because heaven eventually is the goal and everything else is hell, you know? So it made my life a lot easier. Well, not necessarily easier, but it made my life a lot more joyful to be placed in a community where, you know, I'm able to thrive and I'm able to see myself in a much greater light, being the light of Christ.
So you must have associations. Well, I say you must, but I guess I'm assuming a lot there. But I think most young people do. People who identify themselves, either men or women, as gay. at your age. And then, so what is your, do you talk with those folks? What is your message to, say, a young person your own age, whether man or woman, who says, I'm gay, that's my identity, and I feel free because I have, I guess, appropriated that identity. I've grabbed onto it and I've identified myself with it.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. I do have these conversations with a lot of people. I do have a lot of I do have a lot of friends, especially from college, that have identified themselves as gay, men and women both. And I think it would be extremely ignorant for me to say that they are not happy.
Okay.
You know, I think that they can definitely experience some form of happiness in whatever lifestyle they're living. However, I know that the amount of happiness that can be experienced in that lifestyle is very limited. You know, so, and I experienced that firsthand. So when I came to understand the call to holiness from the church, my ability to experience joy and suffering and happiness increased astronomically. You know, so I know that there is more to life than looking at myself as one thing. You know, but they don't necessarily understand that. So what I try to do most often is I try to engage in conversation. You know, I try to make an exchange of persons and exchange of experiences happen, because when I just throw out Bible verses or verses of the catechism, you know, they've heard all of this before. 90% of them have heard all of that before. You know, they looked it up. They've seen it on Google. You know, they've heard these things before, but what they might not have experienced is me. You know, so they might not know on a personal level.
Yes, yeah.
What can be drawn from living out the Catholic version of life, you know, like to simply put it. So I really try to make that conversation happen. And a lot of times, you know, people come away with saying, like, I've never thought about that in that way before. And, you know, I'm not out to convert people. You know, that's not my job. The Holy Spirit will definitely come in after me if it is, the will of God for that to happen. But, you know, I can share my experience. I can share myself with people. And that's really all that I can do. And then, you know, I can plant those seeds, and hopefully the person leaves room enough for the Holy Spirit to come in and make some sort of transformation happen. But, you know, that's not on me. I kind of just have to let God be God in that sense, and don't try and take over for him.
Which entails a great deal of respect for the other person as well, the fact that you're not approaching a person as a project, but as just as
Absolutely.
A person. So I wonder, and please feel free to tell me mind my own business about this question, but I imagine a great many Catholic parents who have their child has told them about their same-sex attraction, maybe using that language, or maybe using the language of the movement, you know, that I'm gay and that's how I'm going to live and all that. So I wonder how your parents reacted and react to you, if you want to share that. But in general, what might your comments be to parents?
So when I first told my parents, they were a bit confused. And I think still are, of how to approach the subject, or how to approach, especially how I live. They know, you know, that I choose not to act on these attractions. But I think, especially my dad, gets really confused and is saying, like, well, how does this work? You know, or how does this, like, what are your thoughts about this?
Yeah.
You know, because I don't think the catechesis, especially around this topic, was the greatest when he was growing up. So he honestly just doesn't know. And I think a lot of parents might be in a similar situation where they just don't know how to approach the subject.
Okay.
But I think my greatest advice to parents would be, don't see your child any differently. You know, because there was nothing different, really, between the day before I told my parents and the day after. You know, I'm still the same girl, and you know, in the eyes of God, I'm still the same, you know? So I think it's important to recognize just that even if we as children don't necessarily recognize our identity, it might take time. You know, this is kind of one of those things where, you know, I definitely didn't feel this way the way that I do now right off the bat. It took years. And it may take a lot of time and a lot of prayer, but I think it's a very sensitive topic. And what's really hard about having these conversations is because a lot of these kids will say, you know, I'm gay. It's just who I am. They honestly believe that it is their sole identity. Like, yeah. They cannot be anything else, even if everyone outside of them knows differently. They have no clue. So I think it's going to be something where we have to make sure that we're listening to them. That's one thing, you know, because their experience is going to tell a lot about the way that they think and what they believe. So it's important to listen to what they have to say. But at the same time, you know, I think that gentle encouragement, maybe just putting courage out there, you know, just reading different books or watching different documentaries about the topic, you know, might be the gentle persuasions that eventually make some sort of change occur. But I don't think it's going to happen the day that the child comes up and says, I'm gay, it's just who I am. You know, it's a process. It's definitely a process that needs to be taken with care, especially if you don't want to drive them out of the faith completely.
And how about your own understanding of your future? You sound you have such a sound of clear joy in your voice. You know, I wouldn't say, wow, she comes off anxious and upset about the future, but do you have anxieties about the future, or do you have uncertainties about what the possibilities are for you in the future?
I do tend to fear the unknown. But I don't think that suffering is one of those things that I fear. And I know that that's a fear for a lot of people. But I say that suffering isn't something that I fear because I know it's going to happen either way. I know that there's going to be suffering in my life. And, you know, I know that there's going to be extreme bouts of loneliness. But I think something that's very important to remember for anyone, you know, whether you're called to single life, religious life, married life, is that nothing and no one can take away the loneliness of our human existence. Only heaven can do that, you know, and we're not going to get, a lot of us aren't going to get to heaven tomorrow. So it's not going to be taken care of tomorrow, you know, so we have to be willing to suffer and suffer well, you know, and I think that I've come to that point in my life where I've noticed, okay, I'm going to suffer either way that I live. So I might as well live a joyful and good life and suffer well versus, you know, what really is the other option, you know, just to live and suffer and be miserable at the same time, you know, like that's a very joyful experience. And anybody that knows me, I think, will say that I'm a very joyfully dispositioned person. You know, so whenever I'm in bouts of misery, I just say, like, I can't live like this. You know, like, this isn't me. This isn't what God is calling me to. You know, God didn't promise us that we wouldn't suffer. You know, if he couldn't avoid it, then neither can we. So I really want to suffer to the best of my ability. But as far as, you know, what I think my vocation is, I still think that I can be married. Honestly, you know, like that that bio is actually a little bit outdated, but I'm 21 years old now. But you know, I have.
So you're really old now. I didn't realize that you're an old lady now. All right, so
talking to my sister about this.
Avera Maria, a lot of people are going to listen to that and say, "Wait, what did she just say?" I still see myself as getting. You need to explain that. And you do. You agreed to this interview. You need to explain that. Go ahead.
I did. Oh, man. Being so young, people do call my age into question. It is mostly questions from people who don't necessarily agree with me, they'll say things like, oh, she's so young, like she hasn't experienced life yet. Right. You know, she's going to meet a girl in 2 years and it's going to like completely change her outlook on maturity, you know. So people will often bring my age up. But I don't necessarily think that my age defines the experience that I can have in Christ, you know, because there are so many saints, young people, you know, that led incredibly holy and devout lives. You know, St. Maria Goretti comes to mind.
But the thing I wanted you to explain, though, because I think you're exactly right about that, and I like that you have a kind of inner strength to say, I'm just not going to accept the limits that you impose on me. And that seems like a grace in your life. But I mean the part where you said, I may still be married. You don't know about it. I think that for many people, that's confusing. What do you mean by that?
Oh, yeah. So the option of being married, I don't think is off the table for me at all, because, you know, marriage isn't something that is based off of how I feel in the present moment, you know, because I think that anybody that's been married over 48 hours knows that, you know, it's a growing process, you know, and also that love is a choice. Is a distinct choice that we make every single day to love another person. You know, it isn't just all the bubbly feelings or the butterflies in my stomach. You know, it is the choice to say, like, I choose to love this man this day and every day for the rest of my life. You know, and just because my sexual attractions might not be there to the extent that it might be of someone who doesn't experience these attractions doesn't mean that I'm going to be a bad wife. Or does it mean that I'm going to make a bad wife, you know? And actually, you know, a lot of people, I think, will tell you that sexual attraction develops over time. You know, as you get to know the person and as you want to experience life to a fuller extent with another person, you know, that can has the ability to change things.
It's
you know,
true.
So I can absolutely believe that I could be called to the vocation of marriage, you know, and I feel like I can make a fantastic wife and a great mother because I don't base my relationships in how I feel, you know, because feelings can change and they can change often.
That is so hard for our culture to understand, though, Vera Maria. I think, and even I'll be honest with you, here again, it sounds like your struggle is the same as everybody else's struggle in that a man gets married. And men have this, you know, automatic visual stimulation constantly. And so he has to go against his nature to some degree to stay chaste and to be devoted to his wife. A woman gets married and she has her being torn in this direction or that direction. And I'm not going to speak for any women about what their experience is like. I feel more comfortable speaking for men. And a person with same-sex attraction, depending on the degree of that attraction and all that, it's not our feelings that make us good spouses. You're exactly right about that. It doesn't make anybody a good spouse. What makes us good spouses is our choices. And in that way, it strikes me that your struggle, were you to be married, is really exactly like everybody else's. It's just slightly different.
Yes, absolutely. I mean,
it's exactly the same in the sense of feelings don't decide the issue. What decides the issue is what you decide to do, what you choose to do.
Absolutely.
So I want to test you real quick on your motherhood skills, though. If you were a mother and your kid was trying to get out of a soccer tournament and they decided to go on a retreat instead, what's your position on that?
Oh, gosh. It depends. It depends because this tournament that I was going to, they didn't need me. You know, I was only, what was I? I was a sophomore, I want to say. So they didn't need me. They had juniors and seniors on the team, you know, so it was fine, you know. But
I'm sorry I gave you a hard time about that.
If it would have been like a state tournament, then maybe I would have been like, you should probably go and play.
All right. Fair enough. All right. You can you passed the motherhood test for today. Vera Maria Santos is our guest, a 21-year-old woman from down south. And her blog is inside my holy of holies. But you go IMHOHblog.com. www.thecatholicvoice.com, and you can read her writing, and it's wonderful writing, and she's a wonderful speaker. You can have her come speak at your parish or event. You just send an email to NIC, that's Nick, NIC, at yourcatholicmedia.com. You sound, Avera Maria, like a whole and healthy and happy person. To what do you kind of give credit for that?
Our Blessed Lady, absolutely. Like, I credit her with drawing me into the beauty and the profound experience that is the Catholic faith, you know. And for a while, I was lost. And I think that she was constantly leading me back to her son, because that's ultimately what she really loves to do. You know, I've gotten to the point where I used to really hate praying the rosary, and now I pray 4 a day because I've been seeing the drastic changes that she's brought about in my life, as well as in the life of others who kind of go to the rosary constantly. And I think that she's been the source of my joy for a long time, especially, you know, if I am called to married life. I want to be as much like her as possible, as much like a wife to Saint Joseph, and as much of, you know, I want to be a mother the way that she was to Christ. And she is my model for the Christian faith. You know, she's my model for, you know, just the joyful experience of life, because she experienced such highs, but she also experienced profound, profound lows in standing at the cross when her own son was being murdered. You know, so I want to imitate her as much as I can. And I think that the rosary has done that for me. And I recommend it, especially the saying the four rosaries a day, the four mysteries a day, to anyone that wants to experience the joys in life, whether they come in the form of happiness or sorrows or trials or anything like that.
Avera Maria Santos, it has been inspiring to talk with you. Thank you so much for taking the time with us.
Absolutely. I enjoyed every minute of it. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. I hope we'll do it again.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Please.
All right. We won't lose your phone number. Avera Maria Santos, you can find her at imhohblog.com. And thank you so much for joining us again on Catholic Answers Focus. If you want to share what we do here with others, just send them to catholicanswerslive.com, and they can sign up for Radio Club and get these Focus interviews in their inbox. We'll see you next time on Catholic Answers Focus.